Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Now part three of our six-part series, The Year of Bill and Rudy, How 1993 Helped Set Up the World of 2023. Bill Clinton became president in 1993, and Rudy Giuliani was elected mayor. So why did America move left and the city move right? And how did those choices help give us the world and the issues we're living with today? For today's installment, we ask very simply, why was Rudy Giuliani elected mayor as a Republican in blue New York City, the first Republican in 28 years at the time, defeating the city's first black mayor, Democrat David Dinkins, who had just made history 4 years earlier? Funny thing is, if you think of Giuliani today as the central figure in the MAGA versus everyone else culture wars, he was and he wasn't a culture war figure in 1993. The first historical soundbite that we'll play is of a man named George Marlin. Now, Marlin was running for mayor on the conservative party line that year, running to Dinkins and Giuliani's right. In a televised debate that Giuliani skipped, Marlin was invited to ask Giuliani a question as if he were in the room, and he asked this.
Why are you going out to Queens County and the outlying boroughs pretending you're a conservative? What you have to explain to the people in the outlying boroughs is, why do you support abortion, the financing of abortion? Why do you support the homosexual agenda? Why do you support domestic partnership? Why did you support luxury rent control? Why did you support condom distribution? Why were you silent on the rainbow curriculum? Why have you flip-flop on job quotas? And why did you come out for homosexuals marching in the St. Patrick's Day parade, marching under their own banners? He has to explain that to the outlying boroughs, not just to the Manhattan crowd where he comes out with these liberal things. Why don't you just admit that you're just another liberal trying to con the conservatives in the city, the Reagan Democrats and Republicans? That's what I want to know, Mr. Giuliani.
So do you recognize the Rudy Giuliani described there by Conservative Party candidate George Marlin on WNBC TV at the time? And Marlin didn't just make that stuff up about Giuliani. Here's Giuliani in a campaign interview himself on CNN that year. The questioner is CNN anchor Bernard Shaw.
Looking at your plan affecting schools, you say you're for condom distribution with parental consent. What about abortions for pregnant teenagers?
Well, it has to be, they have to be made available, and they have to be, a woman's right of choice has to be protected, and it has to be protected completely, including for poor women who don't have enough money to afford abortions.
So Giuliani was for condoms in schools and government-subsidized abortions for low-income women and teens, not the first things you probably associate with him, right? But in other ways, Giuliani was a culture warrior, to be sure. In September of 1992, building his base for the 93 campaign, Giuliani riled up a crowd of police officers who were protesting the creation, the proposed creation at that time, of the Civilian Complaint Review Board. Later in the rally, rowdy officers engaged in what came to be known as the New York City police riot. Along with everything else they heard that day, they heard Rudy Giuliani say this.
The reason the morale of the police department of the city of New York is so low is one reason and one reason alone. David Dinkins!
That's archive audio from New York One News, Giuliani before the so-called police riot in 1992. And that's one reason people were not surprised when Rudy said this at the infamous January 6th Trump rally before the Capitol riot in 2021.
Let's have trial by combat.
And they cheered. We'll hear more archive audio as we go. With us now to help remember and take your oral history calls, a rare treat for those of you who watch the New York One politics show Inside City Hall and have for a long time, Andrew Kurtzman, the host of Inside City Hall from back in the day, and Errol Lewis, the host of Inside City Hall today. Errol is also a columnist for New York Magazine. Andrew has also written two books about Rudy Giuliani, Emperor of the City, which came out in the year 2000, and Giuliani, The Rise and Tragic Fall of America's Mayor, which just came out last September. So Errol and Andrew, always great to have both of you and a treat to have you on together. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
Let me just give each of you a little open mic to say what you might have been thinking about 1993 or Rudy Giuliani, listening to those clips from that time, before I ask you some specific history questions and how they set up the city of today. Anything top of mind about any of that? Andrew, you want to start?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Brian. I had a great vantage point in 93. I was both a New Yorker trying to get, you know, to work in the morning, and I was also a City Hall reporter for the New York Daily News. So I experienced kind of the conditions in the streets that I think led to Giuliani's rise. And then I also watched on a daily basis as David Dinkins tried to kind of get a grip on kind of the daily chaos that New Yorkers were experiencing, and his failure to do so. And I'm happy to talk about it in detail, but there was a reason that Giuliani was elected, and it wasn't cultural issues. I mean, New York is a liberal town. It was a, you know, 5-1 Democratic, but you know, New Yorkers like their kind of Congress people, liberal. they, you know, they like their Washington elected officials, liberal, less so with their mayors. They mostly they want their mayors to keep the place under control. And I think there was a widespread feeling at the time that Dinkins was unable to do that.
Errol, anything you want to add or whatever you were thinking during that little tape crawl there?
Sure, Brian. When you talk about 1993 and that pivotal election in the city, I thought of it as kind of a continuation of the 1989 campaign. So I thought of it as, you know, sort of a turning point in what had been a 4 or arguably 5 year campaign, a political battle that was going on that really marked an important transition in the city. I mean, Dinkins gets elected in 1989 and Giuliani was planning to run to the left of then incumbent mayor Ed Koch. And then kind of changed around once Dinkins became the nominee and really never stopped running from that point. So that when he reemerges at the police riot in 1992 and as a candidate and winning by the same narrow margin by which he'd lost 4 years prior, this was, to me, a pretty even match between the two candidates. And Rudy, as we saw, was willing to say and do and politically migrate the way candidates do. That's how democracy works, in order to get to, you know, 50% plus one. And there were a lot of factors. I mean, it was close enough that any one factor, whether it's the Crown Heights riot in 1991 or the subsequent report about the Crown Heights riot, which was inopportunely timed from a David Dinkins standpoint, or that key referendum about closing down the Fresh Kills garbage dump on Staten Island, which drew out. Well, actually, the referendum was about secession, which right. was never a real plausible a reality, but it certainly brought out a lot of Staten Island voters, and you needed every single vote counted. I mean, 26,000 votes during record turnout of millions of New Yorkers coming out was a very narrow margin by which Rudy won.
And listeners, anyone out there who voted for Dinkins in 1989, but Giuliani in 1993, little oral history invitation there. Recall why for us, if there's anybody like that, 212-433-WNYC. If you voted for David Dinkins in 1989, but Rudy Giuliani for mayor in 1993, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer or anyone else on what you think the legacy of Giuliani as mayor is to this day. Not the later MAGA Rudy, but the Mayor Rudy, and mostly not about 9/11 either, but more systemic things on how the world of 1993 and Giuliani in particular set up the world of today. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So here's a clip of Giuliani talking about crime as a defining issue for his campaign. This is another clip from his Bernard Shaw campaign interview on CNN that starts with a Bernard Shaw question.
Since 1990, there are 3,000 more policemen on New York City streets. The murder rate the murder rate and the rate of reported crimes have gone down. Is Mayor Dinkins really soft on crime in your judgment?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question about it. He refuses to agree with an ending of release of violent criminals to the street early in New York on the under the parole system that we have. Also, those additional police officers are making far fewer arrests. The arrest of drug dealers is down by over 100,000.
What would you do about that? Your first day in office?
I would reinstitute the policy of allowing police officers to arrest street-level drug dealers, which no longer happens. Entire neighborhoods have been turned over to drug gangs now. The numbers are 100,000 fewer drug arrests in the last 3.5 years under Dinkins as compared to Koch. And that has had an impact on reported crime. An awful lot of people aren't reporting crime anymore that they used to report because arrests are down so far.
Giuliani on crime as the issue back then. Andrew, the clips that I hear of Giuliani back then, including very much that one, are very careful not to frame anything explicitly in terms of race. And you say he wasn't running on culture war issues, but maybe it depends on how you define culture war and if you're looking at that at all through a racial lens. I mean, was the race and class appeal there, but subtly coded? He talked about the size of government, crippling the private sector, talking about the economy, talked about crime. He talked about high taxes, making people leave or making it hard to afford their lives. He talked about NYPD morale, never saying black people or black people in power are the problem. But subtext, white grievance a la Donald Trump. But today, Trump and his people just feel freer to say it out loud.
I mean, the subtext of Giuliani's campaign was almost overtly race-based. I mean, the campaign slogan was one standard for one city, which was basically a way of saying that Dinkins was favoring the African-American community.
Are there echoes, Errol, in Trump following our first black president, that Giuliani followed our first black mayor in another close election?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's not even an echo. I mean, it's a pattern. I mean, you could put these folks together. You could probably write a book about it. I mean, backlash and grievance politics and politicians have been a standard. Social movements, including the civil rights movement, give rise to equally potent counter movements, and so. Yes, the Dinkins campaign and the election of the first black mayor of New York City is followed by a backlash, a man with a grievance who runs in this case. It's actually interesting. The one reason it seems coded, Brian, is that Rudy Giuliani is a suburban politician. We know he's born in Brooklyn. We know he comes to Bishop Laughlin, and he's, you know, schooled in Catholic school in Brooklyn, but he's commuting in from Long Island, and he's part of a very potent to this day kind of suburban culture. I was raised in it. I mean, I'm not making this up. Mm-hmm. The suburban culture where there's a great deal of resentment of those people in the city who, quote, drove us out of the city and are mismanaging it. I mean, that's Rudy's appeal. That's his calling card. These are the decades, by the way, where New York is undergoing this tremendous transition. In the 1950 census, something like 85% of the city is white. Now that is changing decade by decade, and it's at a tipping point by the time you get into the 1990s. And here's Rudy basically saying, if you're not happy about this, I'm not happy about this either. Let's change these things around. I mean, his first executive order was to undo some of the minority contracting programs that the Dinkins administration had put in place. That's not an accident. That was like a day one priority for Rudy Giuliani.
And go ahead, Andrew.
Sorry, I just want to add that there was a flip side to that in the 93 race, which is, as you know, both sides claimed they had clean hands on racial matters. There was a lot going on in terms of kind of suggesting the opposite. I mean, I talked about how Giuliani kind of implied that basically, you know, Dinkins was favoring the black community, but Dinkins had Bill Clinton come in and basically accuse New Yorkers of being racist if they weren't voting for Dinkins. And, you know, there was a sense that on both sides that there was a kind of an imbalance or an unfairness that was being levied upon their candidate because of the color of their skin. But I mean, I think the Dinkins campaign was just as guilty for kind of pressing the racial button in their to their advantage as Giuliani.
I really see it that way.
No, not really. I mean, look, the coded messages, the grievance backlash politics was what Giuliani needed to bring to the table. It's very hard to unseat a sitting mayor. So he sort of brought that full force. African Americans then, as now, were a minority in the city. You know, so it was always kind of a peculiar proposition to say that, you know, there was somehow, you know, quote, everything going in the direction of the African American community, which then, as now, had twice the unemployment rate of the larger community. Then, as now, was in isolated, failing schools. Then, as now, was severely underrepresented in the upper reaches of government, even during the Dinkins administration. I mean, you know, the empowerment effort was real. It was needed. And, you know, when Rudy came along and sort of suggested that all of that was somehow, quote, unfair, I'm not sure what the proper reaction would have been. But, you know, Dinkins is a Manhattan liberal, and he sort of spoke from his political heart.
All right. We are getting a number of callers who remember voting for Dinkins in 89 and then Giuliani in 93. Let's take some. Mike in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, Brian. Can you hear me?
I can hear just fine.
Okay. I voted for Giuliani because crime, I live on 12th Street and 6th Avenue, and crime had gone through the roof overnight when Dinkins became mayor. And so right now I'm looking at the crime statistics from the FBI from those years. Give you one example. Dinkins became mayor, I believe it was in 89. 2,200 murders in 89. 3 years later, 2,500 murders, almost 26.
Actually, I think that's wrong. I think the peak year for murders was 1990, and then they started coming down when Dinkins started beefing up the police force, went down faster under Giuliani, but I think they were coming down by the time Giuliani was elected. We'll fact check with our guests, but Mike, go ahead and finish your thought.
If you look at 92 to 93, Dinkins last year, murders went up a little bit. Not much, but a little bit. They actually went up. To 2420, from 2397 to 2420.
All right, I got you. So it was crime. It was all about crime for you, and you didn't feel safe living in the village there. Thank you so much. Jack in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jack. Jack in Manhattan, do we have you?
For three consecutive terms, and crime was spiking all the way through.
Hello?
Yeah, now we have you, Jack. Sorry, the beginning of your call got clipped. You can start over. I apologize.
No problem. I did vote for Dinkins the first time, when he ran. And then I voted for Giuliani. But an interesting fact actually was that I absolutely will never vote for a Republican. But at the time that Giuliani ran that year, the three parties outside of the Democrats, meaning the Liberals, Conservative, and Republican Party, all endorsed Giuliani for mayor. So I actually had to vote on the liberal ticket because I would not pull a Republican liver. It was just kind of interesting that year happened to be that I'm not 100%.
Right. So it helped for you. It helped that Giuliani had the Liberal Party, capital L, Liberal Party endorsement at the time, too. But what was your main issue? Why did you switch from Dinkins to Giuliani?
Again, the same thing as the previous call said the same thing. It was basically about crime. But the interesting thing is, I just want to add this on, that according to, you know, history or made-up history, that Giuliani is the one that actually brought crime down in New York City. I basically don't believe that at all, solely because it was not him that did it in – I mean, yeah, he was mayor of New York City. But if you look at the overall statistics of the nation, not New York City alone, but the nation, crime went down under Clinton.
Right. Jack, thank you very much. In fact, tomorrow's show in this series is going to be specifically – crime nationally with the Clinton crime bill and crime in New York with Giuliani, and how much gets attributed to what and to who. Let's take one more call in this set. Lynn, now a resident of Clifton, New Jersey, a New Yorker at the time. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I'm the same situation as the previous caller. I would never vote for Republican, but Rudy was the liberal nominee. He was on the liberal ticket, and I was able to pull that because I wasn't happy with the way the city was going. I was living on the Upper West Side, and it didn't seem to be going forward. It seemed to be kind of stuck.
Lynn, thank you very much. Errol, did I hear you trying to get in after the first caller there?
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple of things wrong that I just wanted to do a quick fact check on. I mean, David Dinkins takes office on January 1st, 1990. And, you know, it's convenient. I think the caller's exact words were overnight, you know, crime goes through the roof, which ignores, you know, the three consecutive terms of Ed Koch, during which, especially
up and up and up and up and up and up.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the patrol doctrine was wrong. There were a lot of things that were happening. You know, crack, you know, arrived in the mid to late 80s. There were a lot of factors that were going on. I guess that was really the only point. And you were exactly right, Brian. Crime went down, I believe, in every quarter, starting in the second half of the first year. But for the subsequent, you know, like basically 36 months, crime was steadily on the decline under Dinkins. It really took off when the new patrol doctrine came in under Bratton once Giuliani took office, for sure.
Andrew, part of the premise of this series is that right at that moment, 1992, 93, the country turned away from 12 years of Reagan and Bush to elect a Democratic president, and the city turned away from forever liberal rule to elect a Republican mayor. How do those things make sense together? Have you ever thought about that or addressed that in your books?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it goes back to what I was saying before. I mean, New York was and remains a liberal city. But, you know, the New Yorkers care about the kind of state of the streets. They care about crime. They care about prosaic things. They care about, basically, New Yorkers look to a mayor to keep the place under control. It's a totally different kind of framework that they look at than when they consider their congresspeople or their senators. You know, they think about culture issues. Excuse me. This election was a real kind of threshold moment for the city when it just felt as though the streets were kind of, you know, I don't want to use the caricature of the place being completely Wild West, but I mean, New Yorkers were getting used to a level of chaos that was demoralizing the city. And I mean, I think that took totally trumped the whole the national trend. And you know, politics aside, even race aside, and I think, you know, I guess it kind of bothers me to look at that election purely through a racial lens, although race was a major subtext. I mean, the major dynamic there was kind of an erosion of quality of life. And, I remember.
But let me jump in on that point and follow up and ask you if you have stats, if either of you has stats on who flipped from 1989 to 1993. I think we heard one very clear demographic in our little sample of phone calls, people who actually, you know, volunteered to show up just now to recall voting for Dinkins in 89 and Giuliani in 93. And it was white people who lived in Manhattan. And then we had the bump in white voters on Staten Island compared to 89, because that secession referendum was on the ballot.
Right, right.
I don't know if black New York flipped at all in those years to justify saying it wasn't that racial. I don't know. We saw some of that last year with Eric Adams. He got a lot of working class black New York based on crime. But what do the stats from 1993 tell us, if you know?
I'm pretty sure that I think 97% of black New Yorkers stayed with Dinkins in both races. I could be off by a percentage point or or so. But, it, you know, I think it's a leap to kind of conclude that the kind of driving factor was simply mm-hmm. race. And, you know, another way of looking at it, Brian, is mm-hmm. is that the mayor had been, Dinkins had been mayor for 4 years. You know, you would think that he would have been able to expand his popularity, but instead he kind of stayed, you know, pretty much cemented. And, you know, the reason for that is not just racial. I mean, considering what was going on in the city at the time, mm-hmm. I think the reason he was unable to expand his popularity was because a lot of people felt he was doing a lousy job as mayor.
Errol, is the analogy to today almost scarily close? The red wave of the midterm elections never happened nationally, but it did in New York, largely because of crime, or add to those stats from 93, if you know them.
Well, to add to the 93 stats, I mean, the turnout in 1989 was insane for David Dinkins. I mean, you know, it was history making. It was off the charts. And it was a coalition that had, you know, overperformance, as the statisticians would say, of black voters, along with a black Latino coalition that has not been sort of reproduced since, and liberal whites. All parts of that coalition sort of fell apart in 1993 for David Dinkins. So there was high black turnout. I mean, the black turnout was overwhelmingly for Dinkins, but it wasn't nearly as high as it had been in 1989. Liberal whites, including probably some of your callers, had second thoughts and went in a different direction because of the chaos in the city. And then you had some overperformance by some of your outer borough whites, you know, in Staten Island and elsewhere. So he was under a lot of pressure, Dinkins was, from all sides, and they just didn't pull it out.
So how do you think the legacy of Rudy Giuliani most affects what the city is today? Errol?
I think, look, there's something complicated that goes on with memory, you know, because even now you'll see it on social media. People will say, everything went to hell after Rudy was mayor and de Blasio presided over an increase in crime. And the truth is the opposite. I think the final year of Giuliani's administration, there were something like a little over 626 homicides. At the lowest point in modern city history was under Bill de Blasio, and it was under 400. You know, Giuliani could have only dreamt of those kind of numbers in a larger city, by the way.
Yeah.
So I think just before the pandemic. And so even with the bump up after the pandemic, we're still nowhere near where we were at the end of the Giuliani years. So we have, you know, the whole question, I guess, gets complicated by memory, by living memory. But I think the legacy is going to be he did turn around crime. He did introduce CompStat and a new patrol doctrine. And I think he will stand for the proposition, and it's a very important one, that the city can be governed, that it doesn't have to spin out of control.
Right.
You know, there's a subsidiary question of, do you have to be an SOB to make that happen? I think probably most New Yorkers would think you have to be at least a little bit of an SOB to make that happen.
Andrew, any more thoughts on how the Giuliani era set up the New York of today?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Errol 100% on the notion of that someone could make the city seem governable. And I think that's, you know, the condition that led to his rise in popularity was his being able to use the force of his will to turn the city around. But, you know, what we haven't talked about is kind of the rank immorality, you know, that marked Giuliani's tenure. I mean, the, you know, rampant overzealousness of his police department, the stop and frisk procedures, there's so many aspects that were, you know, borderline racist in his rise to, in his effort to turn the city around. And obviously that's a major, major part of his legacy. But as someone who was not just a New Yorker, but kind of watched it extremely up close from City Hall, both the Dinkins administration and the Giuliani administration. It was just night and day, the feeling of kind of competence and the fact that he was driving events and not reacting to them on a daily basis, as Dinkins unfortunately was.
We have 1 minute left. Andrew, I want to give it to you for a kind of addendum, since your new book is Giuliani, The Rise and Tragic Fall of America's Mayor. I'll note that in listening to many old clips of Giuliani to prepare for this series, he mostly sounded like a sort of normal 1990s Republican at that time, no matter what anybody thinks of his policies, pro or con, not necessarily showing signs of the crazy person that most people think he's turned into. So as a student of the arc of Giuliani's life, could we see the seeds of MAGA Rudy back then if we knew what to look for, or did he really, really change? 30 seconds.
I mean, I think the driving dynamic behind Rudy Giuliani's rise and fall was desperation, kind of a desperation for power. And then after he ran for president and lost so badly, a desperation to hold on to power. But there, you know, the hallmarks of his personality, the authoritarianism, right? The racism. They all were there at the time, but they were amplified as he became increasingly desperate and playing to the Trump base.
Giuliani, The Rise and Tragic Fall of America's Mayor is Andrew Kurtzman's new book. Once upon a time, he was a Daily News reporter and host of Inside City Hall on New York One. Errol Lewis is the host of Inside City Hall on New York One now, weeknights at 7 o'clock, and a New York Magazine columnist. Thank you both so much for coming on and remembering 1993 and that whole period from 89 to 93 with us. And even you two may be interested to know that when we follow up tomorrow, specifically on Clinton and Giuliani crime policies from back in that day, we're going to have Al Sharpton and we're going to have William Bratton. So that's coming up tomorrow in this series. Meanwhile, Andrew and Errol, thank you so much.
Thank you.